Welcome all you fellow Arcanists out there to the Frith Guild podcast, where we explore an amazing world full of mystical creatures and their partners. Our hosts are Eric Smith and Scott Wareham, and they'll be your guides along this journey through death and dragons. So grab your eldrin, strap on your swords, and get ready to defend the Argo Empire from evil. Throughout this series, if you have not caught up to the chapters being discussed today, we urge you to hit the pause button, grab your copy of this wonderful book, and catch up. We'll be here when you get back. Guildmaster Eventide, Zelfry, Volk, and the other members of the Frith Guild prepare to accompany Gilly and a wagon load of plague-infested arcane beasts to Thronehold, capital of the Argo Empire. Their arrival should coincide with the Sovereign Dragon Tourney, and all of the apprentices are excited to participate. But before we get into the book, let's look at a piece of advice from the series. Set 34 on the Pillar of Ruma says moderation. Without it, our vices destroy all else. With that, let's join Herrick and Scott for Chapter 6 through 10 of Caliseum Arcanist.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Frith Guild podcast. I'm your host, Eric.
I'm co-host Scott.
And today we're going to be going over Chapters 6 through 10 of the Caliseum Arcanist book. This is the third book in the series by Shami Stovall. And before we get into the details today, we also want to remind you, please like, share, subscribe, all that good stuff. Leave us a review wherever you're listening on, whether it's podcast or YouTube. And with that, we'll dive on in. Starting off with Chapter 6, Under the Skin, Volk tells Ilya that Fane is there with the convoy. Volk pitches this very well by starting that the trinkets he made are actually what Wraith gave up his antlers for. And Fane is there not just as a because moment. Ilya, she just doesn't want him there at all, and she really just wants him dead. Zaxus gives Ilya the refraction spyglass that sees through the invisibility, and we can see that Zaxus obviously cares because he's given her this invisibility spyglass, so she can actually know where Wraith is at all times, or Fane. Volk's actually fairly confident that Fane is going to be a good person, and so far he's been a fairly good judge of character.
And it seems like Fane has reason. He's always kind of wanted to change his ways and just never been able to. He's always been stuck in the pirate role. So you get a feeling that Fane has never truly seen himself as a pirate.
Right. He may have been on the Third Abyss. He may have gotten the tattoo and done all the initiation and all that, but it kind of feels like he's never really committed to it.
It's not his life stream.
Right. He's got something else he wants to do. So Adelgis, Volk, and Zaxus are kind of all stuck in one cart, and Adelgis kind of dived off as soon as he could to get into the carriage. As he said, he's very tired and sleepy. Zaxus is actually reading like he should be. He's reading about metallurgy and realizing that he can use different metals to heat up faster, like copper, so that he can use less magic and less energy to produce a stronger, hotter flame. Adelgis does kind of remain very silent this whole trip as far as we're at this point. And he only really talks in small little spurts. And it kind of leads us to believe something's going on with him. He's mentioned some previous injuries before, along with whatever's going on under his ribs. Something's definitely affecting him now. Volk does also notice that Adelgis is keeping his hair in a very particular fashion, and he believes it's to hide something. And Volk actually goes to check to see what it is and moves his hair out of the way, and it's covering this huge bruise. And it's going all the way from his jawline to below his collar. Saxon says that he's attempted to heal Adelgis, and Adelgis has refused. So again, we're getting kind of curious as to why Adelgis is so adamant about not being healed, not being looked at, not being touched, that kind of thing. So we're really getting to a point of concern, because this isn't normal behavior. Thankfully, Adelgis does agree to let Volk take a look at everything once they get to the inn, but that's still a little bit of ways away.
And I think a couple interesting points of this is, one, Volk's recognition is from Ilya. Ilya does the same thing, and he notices this behavior, which is why it stands out to him. And then also, like you mentioned, Adelgis doesn't want to be healed. And there's the question of, is this something that can't be healed for whatever reason, something that would be beyond Zax's power? Or is this something that, for whatever reason, Adelgis is truly refusing to have Zax's help?
Right. And again, this is all that, what's so wrong that you don't want anything, you know, anybody looking or touching. So they finally get to the first inn that they're meant to be at, and Volk rushes inside with Zaxus and Adelgis. And the innkeeper gives Volk the keys for all the rooms that were previously rented out by the guild. Volk gives the keys to Luther to give to Zelfry because they got to get Adelgis into a room. I can only imagine just once Luther appears out of the void, all the music just stops in this inn. The bad person walking in or the wrong person walking in, and just everything stops. Everybody stops and look, gives them the side eye, makes it very obvious that they're not supposed to be there. Volk is really confused as to why everybody just kind of stops and looks. I think Luther is the one that states that everybody there just assumes that Volk and Luther are part of the Steel Thorn Inquisitors, but he's not sure why they kind of assume this. Luther does kind of give him a quick rundown of like what the Steel Thorn Inquisitors are, and they investigate cult matters. They do also take care of misdeeds of other Arcanists who are abusing their magic. And realistically, they're more after anyone with a bounty, and especially with magic at their disposal. They're used to level the playing field for magic users to keep them in check. So we finally get up to the room that Adelgis, Zaxus, and Volk are supposed to be in, getting everything off his chest. We learn that Adelgis' father actually put a rare mystical creature under his skin. In Chapter 7, A Simple Problem, we find out that there is an eel or worm or something under his skin, and it's protruding about a half an inch, and then at its thickest is about a thumb, and it zigzags all the way from his ribcage past the belt of his pants. Adelgis starts to tell us what's going on, and that Adelgis is actually incubating something for his father, and it needs to feed on magic. Zaxus's first response is, let's cut it out. Volk, give me your sword. Let's cut this thing out right now.
I've seen some horror movies. Zaxus has a point. Incubating yes. some sort of mythical creature underneath our skin, I wouldn't be against cutting it out. It's not supposed to be there, but Adelgis is really, really adamant that he is doing this for his father, and he's going to see it through, and his father's going to be impressed with him at the end of it for carrying out this whole incubation period.
I don't think there's ever a good movie where something that's growing under your skin ever turns out in a good manner. So
the type of creatures that would grow underneath skin just lends itself to be something disgusting.
Exactly. Adelgis does mention that he is very hungry, he needs to eat, and that's more likely what the problem with him is. Volk runs downstairs to get Adelgis something to eat, and he runs into Addy, and she actually is kind of upset with him because they all just took off and didn't help Guild out to get the horses put away, the carriage put away, all that stuff, and that they just ran into the inn. Addy does mention that she's actually trying to talk with Volk because she wants to get help with her sorcery, because she can't do any kind of healing magic, and Volk is turning into like an apprentice teacher, I guess. I don't know if that's the thing, but
teacher a savant apprentice of some sort.
Yeah. he's gotten, you know, good at analyzing things and kind of helping them towards it. You know, we'll take Hexa as a good example of, hey, how about you use daggers with your poison rather than just trying to waft your poison to your enemy. Addy does want to speak to him in private next.
Flirtatious.
Aw, go look at you, Volk.
The young teens just starting out.
So then Zaxus interrupts because they're basically right outside of the inn room that they've got. And Zaxus interrupts by shouting in the room to Adelgis, take off your pants. I want to see how long it is. And as Addy stated out there, like, I can only imagine what she's thinking about. They're talking about
the secondhand embarrassment of Volk just standing there. You know what he's actually going for, but you can't explain it. So you just have to hope she doesn't take it wrong.
Like, there's no way of coming back from that. And you know what? At least he can shadow step and just shadow steps into the room with a bowl of stew. And here's another little win for Volk, that he can bring the stew with him while he shadow steps back into the room, because that would have been kind of sad to lose the stew. with the stew. Adele just kind of downs it. So this is definitely not Eowyn's stew from Lord of the Rings. This is actually edible. And Daxus asks how long it's been since he last ate. And Adele just says it's been over a day.
And I'm always curious with this. Is he forgetting to eat? Is he just so preoccupied that he forgets to eat? Or, you know, does the mythical creature prevent him from feeling hunger? It seems to want to feed on something. So it's a curious situation. It's very, you know, parasite-like of trying to feed off of his nourishment.
At that point, you would think if it's trying to feed off of his nourishment, it'd want to keep him fed, because the better he's fed, the better he is, I guess.
Yeah, it's strange.
Zaxus does quip at Adelgis as far as eating, and he's eating for two, and Felicity actually kind of gets upset with his comments.
And she blinds everyone, which is a fair reaction. There's probably not really as much she can do, so you use what you've got at that point.
And kind of kudos to her, because she's trying to defend her Arcanus. He's kind of down on the ground right now, so she's trying to make sure that they're not kicking him too much.
Standing up to the bullies.
Yep. So from here, we move into Chapter 8, the Augmenting Magic. Adelgis was actually extremely hungry for what was going on, and he ended up eating three bowls of this stew. Mind you, Volk had to pay for this stew out of pocket. This wasn't something that the guild was covering for them. Or at least as far as we know, Volk and Adelgis are actually supposed to be on evening guard duty that night together. They're actually out in protecting the carriage from the plague-ridden creatures.
And they can hear manic laughter coming from the carriage. And manic laughter during the day is offsetting as it is. But I can only imagine at night, it's dark. Everything is just a little scarier. That laughter has got to be nerve-wracking.
Especially with one person that's barely conscious and can barely like stay upright at this point because of how weak Adelgis is, even after eating, you know, he's still very highly affected by this creature thing that's under his skin. There's got to be that extra level that Volk's like, oh my gosh, like there's no way I'm going to be able to make it through watching this carriage plus taking care of Adelgis. And heaven forbid anything happens while he's watching it. Volk does make a really good decision. He uses this time to train with his sword and shield because he's getting more comfortable with the sword, but having the shield caused him for some adjustments with the new style of fighting that Volk's going to have to do. So while he's practicing with sword and shield, he kind of goes like full squirrel moment, like completely off track. And then he's like, you know what? I'm going to figure out how we're going to transfer this night vision to Adelgis. So Luthair is actually giving guidance to Volk on this. He knows that Volk's very frustrated with not being able to just give his augmentation magic to Adelgis. And this is where Luthair kind of steps in and was like, hey, I just wanted to let you know that Mathis actually did struggle with this for a bit as well. Luthair kind of gives Volk that, I don't say the key to figuring it out, but gives him that different angle to help him figure it out. Again, Luthair is trying to let Volk drown. Keep trying, you know, just keep at it. And, you know, maybe I'll eventually give you kind of that, you know, a little bit of an answer. But he does, again, give Volk that different angle, different perspective to look at. And it kind of clicks with Volk at that point. So thankfully, he's able to figure out how to pat that augmentation magic on. Now, as much as we always joke about Luthair constantly like waiting for Volk to be drowning before he helps, this is a really good thing for Luthair to do because realistically, if he didn't have Volk try to critically think about things, this could be a very bad thing and the wrong encounter because Volk could be just completely unable to think without Luthair, and Luthair may not have the solution or the answer to the problem. I mean, shoot, look back at Dreadpire Arcanus when Volk's like, hey, how do I take down a Dread Pirate? And Luthair's like, I don't know, man. We weren't stupid enough to get in this situation before.
There is some benefit of going through some trials of, you know, earning your stripes a little bit.
Exactly. So Adelgis is kind of not really sure why he's even on guard duty with Volk, because Adelgis is like, I mean, I can create light. Cool, here, it's all bright now. Yay. It's not all dark. So he's looking at it as he really can't do, he doesn't really have any offensive magic or even really defensive magic. He's kind of down in the dumps a little bit, especially with everything that's going on. Adele just does kind of tell Volk finally that he's supposed to be incubating whatever is under him, under his skin, for a total of 4 years.
And this would put roughly in his early teens, maybe kind of mid-teens when he got this. So a very, very impressionable age, and definitely an age when, you know, wanting to impress your father would be a big factor in decision-making.
Well, and especially because we've been told that his father has forgotten him at the lab. Since he's kind of that middle kid, he doesn't always get remembered about. So he wants to be able to impress his father. So I imagine that a lot of what went behind the decision-making that Adele just did is probably because of that.
I 100% agree. As much as I don't like the incubating a mythical creature, I can't fault his decision-making and how he got there. It makes sense.
Right. Especially looking back at everything. It is what it is, I guess. We'll chalk it up as that for Adelgis. As they're on their guard duty, Guildmaster Eventide actually comes in and she starts petting the horses. And you know, basically, it's just like, I'm going to help you watch the mobile insane asylum. Like, Volk, you can train. And you're going to watch this too, but you're going to watch it every other night rather than just every night. I'm going to take some of the load off of you so you're not as exhausted, so you can still train. I have to admit, when I read this, I'm like, is this really Guildmaster Eventide, or is this like an imposter? Like, I don't know if there's somebody else, a different Eldarin or something that could make her or impersonate her like that, but I was kind of like, this seems like it's a bad thing. It's about to happen. Volk, very intelligently, very committed, decides rather than going to bed, he actually uses the rest of the time he has in the night to go train and get some discipline. As the sun's coming up, he sees Zelfri and Hexa training together. Now, Hexa did take Volk's advice on using the throwing knives. Zelfri kind of just, I don't want to say embarrasses her, especially because she's just learning to use throwing knives. She can at least throw them accurately, but not with a lot of power. So Zelfri does give her a lot of homework. Hey, you know, first you got to get faster at throwing these things. Don't ever throw your last knife. You always keep on to one so that at least you have something to defend yourself with or something to attack with. So he, you know, you need to get faster, you need to get stronger, here's a list of things I need you to work on.
And one of the fun ones that he mentions is to study anatomy, mostly because if you can hit a important artery, the poison will get through the bloodstream faster and you could take down your opponent faster. So a very, very technical approach to some of the tactics that we see, you know, Zaxxas approaching the different heat capacity, studying anatomy. It is a very, very technical and research-driven process.
I imagine this is one of those things that Zelfri's kind of kicking himself in the butt for, because he's like, I should have had them started on this a lot sooner. I should have, you know, made them at least look things up a little bit earlier so that way they could get that processing rather than just, okay, let's train your magic.
And we also find out as they are wrapping up, Adelgis is helping Zelfri to sleep, and we know that Adelgis has helped Volk with sleeping before, so he's continuing to improve his magic in that way and just making sure that Zelfri doesn't have nightmares and that he's able to, you know, get the most out of the night.
And we finally find out that the thing that's living under Adelgis' skin is called an abyssal leech.
Sounds terrifying.
It's got leech in it.
All right, moving into chapter 9, the city of religious Elios. So the guild is actually traveling through where Adelgis grew up. We know they went to the Isle of Ruma at one point, and the apprentices were able to see their families, and now we're able to kind of get a glimpse into Adelgis's childhood. And surprise, surprise, it is a very, very scholarly city. It has a university, and it is well known for its research capacity. Zaxxas has taken on his motherly role of checking in on Adelgis, making sure he's eating. Addie continues to make sassy comments about their relationship and how they're interacting. And Zaxxas is powering through them and really taking it to heart to make sure that Adelgis is doing well. He's covering his shifts, really just looking out for him all around.
When did Zaxxas get so nice?
He's reading books. He's caring for his friends. A changed man.
Shoot. Like this is one of those other ones. Like, is this an imposter? Because he's doing nice things. He's not just being Mr. Hothead. So Zaxxas actually also shows us that the carriage that's holding the playground and creatures is impervious to magic. And we find out that the wood is cured and stained in Nullstone, which is a type of rock that actually nullifies magic. And this is where Zaxxas is like, hey, look, I'm going to use my fire against it and show you that nothing's going to happen.
And this is extremely helpful and good to know, just because if the plague-ridden monsters are getting stronger and stronger, you want to have some way to prevent them from using their magic to escape. So very cool and interesting facet to the carriage.
And even more than that, it's kind of that, like, what other things can it be used for?
Potentially very, very useful, not only in prisons, but I could also see it being used as military tactics somehow as well. So something definitely to see more into in the future. And at this point, Thane shows up and Zaxxas is ready to fight him right away. We are back to the original Zaxxas. His good days are over. He's back to his normal man. Volk breaks up the confrontation and really orders Zaxxas to stand down. After the situation de-escalates a little, Thane actually goes to Volk and asks him if he can tail him, almost to understand how he interacts with people, get a better understanding almost of how to be a friend.
Thane kind of wants to be like Baymax, learn how to be a good healthcare provider.
Yes, he really does. He wants to be better. And this points again to Volk's good judgment and faith in people as a whole. As they make it into the town, we come to know that Zelfrey is going to go and actually confront Adelgis' dad. We know they had a bad history before, and Zelfrey's not a fan of him. And he's less a fan of, incubating the Abyssal Leech. Chapter 10 opens up, and Zaxxas and Adelgis have this moment where Zaxxas doesn't really know what Adelgis' last name even is.
As they're walking up to Adelgis' house, like, his last name is written all over, on the property. And he's like, Venrover? Who's Venrover? And it's like, how do you not know his last name? Come on. You've been training with each other for over a year. Like, a year and a half at this point. You're probably closer to two. And you don't know his last name? Like, I'm sure there's people you work with that you know their last name within the first, 10 days.
It's baffling to say the least. And Zaxxas quotes that Adelgis doesn't even know his name, and Adelgis is a scholar and is readily available to provide the answer. So Zaxxas is left sitting in his own puddle of mud there. We come to find out that Zelfrey actually used to work with Thiessen, who's Adelgis' dad. And that's really the reason that Adelgis wanted to study under Zelfrey, is because of the relationship that they had.
This is kind of disturbing that Adelgis is just so afraid to disturb his father while he's working. Like, he is dead set, like, please, if there's anything you do, can you please not disturb him while he's working?
Instead of that, they end up disturbing his mom. And his mom is a Minerva Owl Arcanist. And their relationship is almost confrontational. There's no affection between them. Adelgis asks about his sister, and this is really the only time that he seems to have a true interest in the well-being of his family, is being concerned with what is going on with his sister. And it turns out that Zelfrey also knows Adelgis' mom, and surprise, surprise, is not a fan of her either. They get into their own confrontation, and Zelfrey brings up the leech and the incubation, and she responds that it has nothing to do with him and isn't of his concern, even though it's having an impact on Adelgis. And we find out that Zelfrey actually killed the other leech Arcanus because of the negative impact that they were having, and that the leech that Adalgis is incubating is the last remaining one, and one that was supposed to have been killed but was somehow saved. The confrontation between Zelfri and Adalgis' mom escalates. He ends up grabbing her. She uses her magic and creates a gust of wind and then kicks them out. And Zelfri has lost any kindheartedness that she ever had for him again. So a very, very confrontational chapter. And there's a lot of insight into the workings of Adalgis' family and the upbringing and connection that they have with each other.
I will have to say, though, this is a very abrupt ending to this chapter. Even when I was reading through the chapter, I kept reading. I flipped immediately to chapter 11, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. I got to stop. Can't add that into this. This is not the right chapter now.
Stay tuned.
Cliffhanger. And then moving into our bestiary section.
There are two creatures that get brought up. One is the Minerva Owl that we see with Adeldus's mom, and the other is the Enbar, which is leading the horses. The Minerva Owl is associated with wisdom and the wind magic that she has. And the Enbar is associated with being able to increase the stamina, endurance, and speed of horses. But outside of this, there's not really anything known to them. We don't have any info on, you know, their magic or their reproduction much otherwise, or the passive abilities that they give. So not too much to dive into, but some interesting creatures that are popping up on some of the other characters.
I actually did a lot of research trying to find out more about Enbar, just as far as like mythology goes, where else it's been found. And there's really only been like one place that I found that there was any kind of mention of it. It was really just the Irish mythology that had mention of it. And it was actually the name of a horse that could run on water and on land at extremely fast speeds. So that was really like the only other like place I could find anything on Enbar.
And I know Minerva is a Roman god, I believe. It's the Roman version of Athena, so a goddess of wisdom, and fits very well with the scholarly studying and research of the family.
All right. And with that concludes this week's episode. You can find us on Podbean, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, basically anywhere that you can listen to podcasts. We are also on YouTube. And if you want to join in on the fun, you can find us on the Facebook group at Frith Guild Podcast. And if you want to reach out to us, you can contact us at frithguildpod@gmail.com or send us a message on Facebook or comment on Facebook. In addition to all of that, we're going to also put all of the links to everything down below, including the Frith Chronicles fandom. And we want to give a huge shout out to them, as we do look up a lot of our information for mystical creatures in there. And I know here with the soon release of the Kickstarter for the bestiary that Shami Stovall is putting out, I know some information will be updated shortly. So we'll just got to keep an eye on that. Thank you for listening. Scott, did you have anything else to add?
Excited to get to the tourney. We're making our way to the tourney, and I'm very excited for it.
All right. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.